to the barest. Emmanuel Rubin said in a scandalized whisper, he offered to pay for the dinner. He glanced with owlish ferocity at the guest who was attending that month's Black Widower's banquet. Yes, he did, said Mario Gonzalo casually. And I suppose you accepted, said Rubin. No, I didn't, though I don't see why he shouldn't if he wants to. If someone is anxious to pay for the privilege of dining with us, why not let him? Because we would be selling our freedom of choice, you idiot, and that is without price to the rest of us. Do you think I'm willing to eat with anyone who'll pick up my check? I choose my companions. Damn it, Mario, if he offered to buy us, that should in itself instantly disqualify him as a guest. Well, it doesn't, so why not calm down, Manny, and listen? I've told the others already and saved you for last because I knew you'd rant away. He got in touch with me. Do you know him? No, but he introduced himself. He's Matthew Paris, and he's a lawyer. He knew of the Black Widowers, he knew I was to be the next host, and he wanted to see us professionally, all of us. He asked to join us at our banquet, and offered to pay if that would help. He seemed like an interesting guy, so why not? Rubin said discontentedly, Why should professional matters intrude on the banquet? What does he want to do, serve us with summonses? No, said Gonzalo with an affectation of eye-rolling impatience. He represents Ralph Otter. We still send Ralph invitations, and that's how this guy Paris knew I was the next host. He got in touch with me at Ralph's instructions. I suppose you remember Ralph. Rubin's eyes flashed behind his thick-lensed glasses. Of course I remember him. I'm surprised you do. I didn't know you had become a member before he left. Memory decays with age, Manny. Rubin ignored that. That was 12, 15 years ago when he left us, when the Black Widowers were just beginning. That was before we met at the Milano, before Henry's time. He looked in Henry's direction with a smile and said, It doesn't seem possible we could have had meetings of the Black Widowers without Henry. But then, in those days, we wouldn't have believed it possible to have dinners without Ralph. It was in 65 he went to California, wasn't it? We were kids then. I believe, said Geoffrey Avalon, who had drifted toward them, his neatly bearded face solemn, that you and I, Manny, were 40-ish even then, scarcely kids. Oh, well, Rubin said. What does Ralph want with us, Mario?
I don't know, said Gonzalo. Paris wouldn't say. Have you heard from him lately?
Not a word in years. He doesn't even send in a refusal card to the invitations. Have you heard from him, Jeff?
No, said Avalon. Tom Trumbull says Ralph is teaching navigation at CIT, but has had no personal communication.
Well then, Jeff, what do we do about this lawyer Mario has dragged in?
Treat him as any other guest. What else can we do?
Henry approached, his smooth and unwrinkled face radiating the efficiency that was characteristic of this best of waiters. He said, Mr. Gonzalo, we are ready to begin dinner if you will be so kind as to call the meeting to order. The dinner was quieter than usual, as Matthew Paris somehow absorbed the attention of the others. He seemed oblivious to that, however, his smooth-shaven face shining pinkly, his graying hair slicked smoothly back, his smile wide and unaffected, his speech precise and with a flat Midwestern accent. At no time did he refer to the business at hand, but confined himself to discussing the Middle Eastern situation. The trouble, he said, was that both sides were playing for time. The Arabs felt that as oil supplies dwindled, world hunger for energy would bring victory. Israel felt that as oil supplies dwindled, Arab influence would dwindle with it. To which James Drake said somberly that as oil supplies dwindled, civilization might break down and the whole matter of victory, quote unquote, he said, in the Middle East or anywhere else would be irrelevant.
Ah, said Paris. But your fiery ideologue doesn't care about trivial things such as survival. He would rather win in hell than lose in heaven.
Mario Gonzalo, who had put aside his rather blinding pea-green jacket and was eating veal cordon bleu in his striped shirt sleeves, leaned toward Thomas Trumbull and whispered, This whole thing may be a practical joke, Tom. I only met Ralph 2 or 3 times before he left. He was a peculiar fellow, as I recall. Trumbull's bronzed forehead furrowed under his white thatch of hair.
So are we all, I hope. Ralph Otter founded this club. We used to eat at his house during the first 2 or 3 years. He was a widower, a gourmet cook, an astronomer, and a word buff.
That's what I remember, the word buff bit.
Yes, said Trumbull. He's written books on acrostics and on novelty verse of all kinds. Conundrums involving wordplay and puns were a specialty of his. He's the one who got Roger Halstead interested in limericks.
Gonzalo laughed. How did you stand it, Tom?
Trumbull shrugged. It wasn't the sole topic of conversation, and I was younger then. However, Ralph remarried, as you probably remember, went to the West Coast, and we never heard from him again. Then Jim Drake and I found the Milano, and the Black Widowers have been here ever since, better than ever.
Henry refilled the coffee cups, and Gonzalo played a melodious tattoo on his water glass with his spoon. Jim, he said, as the oldest member and the one who best knew Ralph Otter in the old days when even Manny claims to have been a kid, would you do the grilling honors?
James Drake lit a fresh cigarette and said, Mr. Paris, how do you justify your existence?
At the moment, said Paris, by attempting to make you somewhat richer than you have been hitherto, or if not you, Dr. Drake, then another one of you.
Don't you know which?
I'm afraid not, gentlemen. In order to know, I must complete the reading of the will.
Will? What will?
Drake took the cigarette from his mouth, placed it in an ashtray, and looked uneasy. A heavy silence descended on the rest of the table. Henry, who had been serving brandy, desisted.
Paris said seriously, I was instructed to say nothing concerning the matter till I was a guest at a Black Widower's banquet and till I was being grilled. Not till this moment.
Drake said, It is this moment. Go on.
Paris said, I'm sorry to have to tell you that Mr. Ralph Otter died last month. He had been pretty much of a recluse since his second wife died 3 years ago, and at his request, no announcement of his death was made. Though he had made a clean break with his life in New York after he left for California, he did not apparently forget his old friends of the Black Widowers. He asked that I hand out one of these to each of you, provided all 6 were present, and you all are.
Envelopes were passed out to each of the stunned Black Widowers. Each bore the name of a Black Widower in careful India ink lettering.
Drake muttered, There's his monogram. Each envelope bore a stylized sketch of what was unmistakably an otter with a fish in its mouth.
Trumbull said, Did we each get the same?
Gonzalo said, Read it and we'll see.
Trumbull hesitated, then read in a low monotone,
Well, don't sit there like idiots. There's no reason to get into a mood. Remember, mood spelled backward is doom. I've been with you in spirit every month since I left, even if you haven't heard from me, and I'm with you again now, ready for our last game.
That's what mine says, said Gonzalo. There was a murmur of agreement from the rest.
Well then, said Paris briskly, I'll now read the will. Not the entire will, you understand, but only that portion that applies to the club. If you're ready.
There was silence, and Paris read.
It is my further wish and desire to make a bequest to the Black Widowers, a club I helped found, and for the members of which I have always had a profound affection. Therefore, I wish to leave a sum of money, which, after taxes are paid, is to come to $10,000. This sum is to go to one of the following gentlemen, all of whom were members of the club at the last meeting I attended, and all of whom, I believe, are still alive. They are Thomas Trumbull, James Drake, Emmanuel Rubin, Jeffrey Avalon, Roger Halstead, and Mario Gonzalo.
Paris looked up and said, For the record, there are 6 of you at the table, and I believe you are the 6 whose names I have read off. Are there any discrepancies?
Gonzalo said, There is a 7th member. Henry, our waiter, is the best Black Widower of them all.
Halstead said, He wasn't a member in Ralph's day. Hell, I can't believe he's dead.
Do you remember that time he asked us to find a common English word that contained the letters UFA in that order? It kept us quiet all that evening.
Yes, said Drake, and it was you who got it. That's why you remember.
Reuben said, Quiet!
His straggly beard bristled.
I demand silence. The will hasn't been read yet. What does Ralph mean that one of us will get the money? Why only one, and which one?
Paris cleared his throat.
I don't know. It is at this point I have been instructed to open a small envelope labeled 1. Here it is.
Well, don't open it just yet, said Reuben violently. Mario, you're the host, but listen to me. If any bequest were left to the club or to the six of us in equal division, that would be all right. To leave it to only one of us would, however, create hard feelings. Let's agree, then, that whoever gets the money sets up a fund for the use of the Black Widowers as an entity.
Gonzalo said, I'm willing. Any arguments?
There was none, and Gonzalo said,
Open the envelope, Mr. Paris.
Paris opened it, withdrew a 3x5 card, glanced at it, looked surprised, and said, It says, To the Barrist.
What?
Said Trumbull indignantly.
Paris looked on the other side, shook his head, and said, That's all it says. See for yourselves.
The card was passed around.
Avalon chuckled and said, Don't you get it? He said in his note there would be a last game, and this is it.
What kind of game? Said Gonzalo.
Reuben snorted and said, Not one of his good ones. Go ahead and explain, Jeff.
Avalon looked solemn and said, In the Greek myths, the sea nymph Thetis married the mortal Peleus, and to the wedding all the gods and goddesses were invited. The goddess of discord, Eris, was overlooked. Furious, she appeared unbidden, and into the happy throng tossed a golden apple, then left. Hermes picked it up and noticed a small message attached. What it said was, To the fairest. Three goddesses at once reached for it. Hera, the queen of heaven, Athena, the goddess of wisdom, and Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty. The quarrel that resulted ended in the Trojan War.
Exactly, said Reuben. And I suggest we not play Ralph's game. I don't know what the hell he means by the barest, but if we start arguing about which one of us qualifies for $10,000, we will end with every one of us aggrieved, winner and losers alike, even if we put the money into a fund. Earlier, Mr. Paris said that ideologues valued victory above survival, but I don't. I don't want to see the Black Widowers come to an end over the question of who wins $10,000.
Hear, hear, said Gonzalo. Even you say something sensible now and then, Manny. Let's agree that each one of us is in a six-way tie for barest. Take the money and put it into the fund.
Excellent, said Avalon. I don't see that there would be any objection to that.
Again there was a silence, but Paris said, I'm afraid my instructions were to allow discussion and then to open another small envelope marked two.
Gonzalo looked surprised and said, Well, open it.
Paris opened the second envelope, removed a folded piece of paper, and unfolded it to find a single-spaced typewritten message. He glanced over it and chuckled. He said, Here is what it says. I have no doubt that Jeff Avalon, in his endearingly pedantic way, will have by now explained the connection of the message with the apple of discord at the wedding of Thetis and Peleus. Avalon, having flushed to his hairline, said stiffly,
I have never denied that I have a touch of pedantry about me. I trust that I have never been offensively so, or if I have, that I may count on my outspoken comrades of the Black Widowers to tell me so.
Don't get defensive, Jeff, said Trumbull. We're all pedants. Go on, Mr. Paris.
Paris nodded and said, Of Thetis and Peleus. It may also be that someone, possibly Manny Reuben, will suggest that the game be refused and the money be shared. Not so. Sorry to insist, but only one person gets the money, and that person will be he who can demonstrate himself to be the barest to the satisfaction of the executor of the will. Failing that, no one of them will get the money. I dare say Jeff can explain the appropriateness of this, if he has not already done so.
Avalon cleared his throat and looked harassed.
I don't think it's necessary I do so.
Reuben said, It's all right, Jeff. I'll take over. Everyone knows I'm no pedant.
Not bright enough, muttered Gonzalo.
Reuben, glaring briefly at Gonzalo, said, As Jeff said, three goddesses claimed that apple. Hermes, who had picked it up, could see at once that this was no place for an innocent god, and he absolutely declined to make a decision. One by one, the other gods also declined. After considerable discussion, someone suggested that some poor mortal be stuck with the task. The one selected was a shepherd boy on the slopes of Mount Ida near Troy. The three goddesses appeared to him in all their magnificence, and each, fearing that she might not win in a fair contest, attempted to bribe the judge. Hera offered him world conquest, Athena offered him the crown of wisdom, and Aphrodite offered him the most beautiful girl in the world as his wife. The shepherd boy was young enough to find the third bribe the most attractive, and chose Aphrodite. Undoubtedly she would have won in a fair contest of fairness, but it was a disastrous choice just the same. The most beautiful girl in the world was Helen, queen of Sparta, and the shepherd boy, some years later, carried her off with Aphrodite's help, and that started the Trojan War. The shepherd boy's name was Paris, and he was one of the 50 sons of Priam, king of Troy. The decision among the goddesses is a favorite scene among artists, and is commonly referred to as the Judgment of Paris. Clearly, Ralph couldn't resist playing on words and setting up the Judgment of Paris, two R's. Paris smiled and said, "I seem to have the worst of it. Instead of choosing among three glorious goddesses, I am faced with deciding among six not particularly attractive men." Reuben said, "You're not faced with any decision at all, actually. Ralph can't make us play the game. If the only way we can get the $10,000 is to compete for it, then I suggest we let the whole thing go. $10,000 is something we can live without. We have lived without it all these years. What we can't live without is our mutual friendship." Halstead looked regretful. "Well, now we can use the money. It could defray part of the costs of the banquets. What with inflation, I, for one, am finding it difficult to cover the expenses. Since I'm the most nearly bald member of the group, can't we say I'm obviously the barest and let it go at that?" Gonzalo said, "We could decide that barest means the most nearly nude. Then I can strip to my underwear, collect, and we'll set up the fund." "Oh, God," said Reuben. "Look, I'd pay you $10,000 if I had it to spare, not to strip." Drake said dreamily, "If we were ecdesiasts, it would all be simple. A nice six-way tie." Paris said, "Now, gentlemen, wait. This is serious. I disapprove of wills such as this one, but I am the executor, and I must treat it seriously. I don't know what Mr. Otter means by the barest, but it is undoubtedly something that is first not obvious and second compelling. If one of you can demonstrate what is meant by barest and then show compellingly that one or another of you is barest, I will release the money. Otherwise, I can't. Baldness, and for that matter nudity, do not strike me as clever explanations of the meaning of the phrase. Try again." "No, we won't," said Reuben. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Roger, for that baldness suggestion. If you need money that badly, I'll contribute to the payment when it's your turn to host." Halstead turned red, and he pointed an angry finger at Reuben. "I don't need money that badly, and I wouldn't come to you for help if I was starving." Avalon said, "Well, the apple of discord is beginning to do its work, obviously. Manny is right. Let's let it go while we're still on speaking terms." Halstead frowned as he passed the palm of his hand over his high forehead, but he kept quiet. Reuben muttered, "Sorry, Raj. I meant no offense." Halstead waved a briefly forgiving hand. Paris said, with considerably more than a trace of apology, "My instructions are that after you have had time for discussion, I am to open the small envelope marked 3. Drake said softly, "How many envelopes do you have, Mr. Paris? This can go on all night." "This is the last envelope," said Paris. "Don't open it!" roared Reuben. "There's nothing he can say that will change our minds." Paris said, "I am compelled to open and read this third message by the ethics of my profession. I can't compel you to listen, of course, so if any of you wish to leave the room, you may." No one did, however, not even Reuben. Paris opened the third envelope, and this time he looked grim as he scanned the message. "I think you had better listen," he said. "The message reads, I think it possible that the group may decide to turn down the bequest rather than play the game. If they do so, or if they play but do not solve the riddle, I do will and bequeath the money unconditionally to the American Nazi Party." There was a unanimous, wordless rumble from the Black Widowers. Paris nodded. "That's what it says. See for yourselves." "You can't do that," said Halstead. I am legally compelled to do so, said Paris, if you refuse to play the game. I am just a sluice through which the money passes. I cannot take independent action. Of course, any or all of you may contest the will, but I don't see what grounds you can possibly have, what legal grounds, that is. A man can do as he wishes with his property within certain clearly defined legal limits, and those limits don't seem to be transgressed here. Then let's play the game, said Halstead. I say I'm the barest because I'm the baldest. I don't say that to win the money, Manny. I say it to keep it out of the hands of the Nazis. Now, if you'll agree to that, Mr. Paris, you can hand over the money, and we'll put it into the fund, and that's that. Paris hesitated. I'd like to. I would really like to. The trouble is, I can't. Why not? Do you want the money to go to the Nazis? Of course not, said Paris, with some indignation. But my only duty here is to respect the will of my client, and he wants one of you to demonstrate that he is the barest in so clever and unmistakable a way that I will be compelled to accept it and to select one of the six of you as the winner. After that, the money is the property of the winner, and he is free to do with it as he wishes. Keep it, divide it equally among the six of you, set up a trust fund for whatever legal purpose or anything else. Are you sure? Said Trumbull. No more clever little notes? No more, said Paris. The reading is complete. I must remind you now that it's a case of the judgment of Paris. You have to convince me of the validity of the solution, or I have to give the money to... I have no choice. Gonzalo said, according to Manny, Paris, the original Paris, was bribed into giving his judgment. Does that mean... Paris said seriously, please don't finish that remark, Mr. Gonzalo. It will not be funny. Reuben said, then we have no choice. We have to play the game. Who's the barest? Halstead said, we can't answer that until we find out what the old nil nisi bonum and all that. What does Ralph mean by barest if he doesn't mean baldest? He may mean poorest, the person who is barest of money, said Gonzalo. I think I'm in the running for that. Or shortest, said Avalon. The one who most nearly barely exists, so to speak. That's you, Manny. You may have 8 inches on me, Jeff, said Reuben, but that could be 8 inches of solid bone. How about the one with the smallest wardrobe, which eliminates Mario, or else the lowest IQ, which puts him right back in the running again? Gentlemen, gentlemen, interposed Paris. None of this sounds in the least convincing. Please be serious. You're right, said Reuben. This is too serious a matter for fooling, but I hate this thing too much to be able to think clearly about it. I say we get Henry into the thing right now. Henry, who had been standing at the sideboard, listening attentively, now shook his head. I'm sorry, gentlemen, but that would not be fitting. The deceased did not know of me, did not consider me a member of the club, and I do not qualify to play the game. You're a member now, said Trumbull gruffly. You may not qualify to inherit the money, but you qualify to advise us as to who may. Go on and tell us, Henry. Henry said, I don't think I can, Mr. Trumbull. If I am a member of the Black Widowers, I am the only member who has never met Mr. Otter. I do not know the cast of his thought. Trumbull said, there's no mystery there. You've heard us discussing him. He was a word nut. Come on, Henry. If you didn't know Ralph, neither did he know you. He didn't know your faculty for seeing the simple things. Henry sighed. I will do my best, sir. May I ask some questions? For instance, am I correct in taking it for granted that the deceased was not a Nazi sympathizer? Hell no, said Reuben with a snort. Quite the reverse. During the 1950s, he was in trouble because some people thought his views were too leftist. Then he doesn't want the money to be left to the Nazis? Of course not. So he expects you to win. Avalon said, he expects us to do so, but he may overestimate our abilities. Henry said, do you suppose his eagerness to have you win would extend to his giving you a hint? Gonzalo said, what kind of a hint? I'm not sure, Mr. Gonzalo, but let us see. Is Mr. Otter's name spelled in the usual way? You mean like the animal? Said Trumbull. O-T-T-E-R? No, it's spelled O-T-T-U-R, with a U. Henry said, I believe that when the preliminary envelopes were handed out, Dr. Drake said something about Mr. Otter's monogram.
Drake said, I meant this sketch on the envelope.
Yes, I had thought that might possibly be so. Has he always used that monogram, Dr. Drake?
As long as I've known him, and that goes back a long time.
Henry said, I can understand the Otter, which is a clear reference to Mr. Otter's name in a punning sort of way. May I ask if it is known whether the fish in the otter's mouth is a trout? There was no reply at first, but finally Avalon said,
I don't know that I gave that any thought. It could be a trout, I suppose.
Why do you ask? Only because trout, T-R-O-U-T, is an anagram of otter, O-T-T-U-R. The two words consist of the same letters in different arrangements. An otter holding a trout is double reference to his last name by way of a pun and an anagram. Does that fit his character?
Absolutely, said Reuben. The otter was obvious to all of us, but I never thought of the trout. He never explained that, as far as I can recall. But then he never explained anything. He wanted everything worked out. But what does all this have to do with the problem facing us, Henry?
It seemed to me, gentlemen, that the preliminary message was not really a necessary prelude to the will, and might well have been omitted. Furthermore, I saw no point in giving each one of you an identical message. A single message read out would have done as well, as in the case of the three messages in the three envelopes that were part of the will. Looking at it in that fashion, Henry went on, it occurs to me that he was really handing out his monogram and making sure that each one of you got a good look at it, and will therefore perhaps think of using it as a clue to the nature of the game. The monogram is a pun and anagram on Mr. Otter's last name. The solution to the problem facing us may rest in just that, puns and anagrams on last names. The six black widowers looked thoughtful at that, each in his own way, and finally Drake stirred. He said,
You know, that sounds like Ralph, and if so, let me point out that D-R-A-K-E can be rearranged into R-A-K-E-D, and a piece of ground that has been raked is bare, to say nothing of the fact that it is only one letter removed from N-A-K-E-D, which is certainly barest.
Paris said, Raked doesn't sound compelling to me, and naked is completely impermissible. I don't think we would be allowed to substitute letters.
Reuben said, Let me offer a pun, then. We don't have to rearrange the letters R-U-B-I-N. Just change it into two words, R-U-B-I-N, rub in. Cold cream, which is rubbed into the skin, appears to vanish and leave the skin bare. How about that?
Even more far-fetched than raked, said Paris.
Gonzalo said, G-O-N-Z-A-L-O can be rearranged to A-Z-O-L-O-N-G, which is a so long in a German accent. A goodbye, in other words. And when everyone says goodbye, you're left bare of company.
Good God, said Reuben.
I can't think of anything else, said Gonzalo defensively. If we're going to misspell, said Halstead, my name can be rearranged into S-T-E-A-L-D-H, which is a misspelling of stealth, and if people steal away, the place is left bare.
Worse and worse, said Reuben.
I'm worst of all, said Trumbull, scowling. The only vowels in my name are two U's, and I can't do anything with that.
Paris said impatiently, You are still not serious, gentlemen. None of this is worth anything at all. Please, if you want to keep the money from falling into vile hands, you must do better.
Avalon, who had had a tight smile on his face for the preceding few minutes, now hunched his magnificent eyebrows down over his eyes and let out a satanic cackle.
But I have it, gentlemen, and I'm delighted to be able to say that Henry, our unexcelled waiter, has overlooked the key clue. No matter, Henry, even Homer nods.
Far less often than I do, Mr. Avalon. What clue did I overlook, sir?
Why, in the preliminary message, there is not only the monogram, as you correctly pointed out, Henry, but also a reference to the fact that M-O-O-D, spelled backward, is D-O-O-M. That statement is rather a non sequitur, and we have a right to wonder why it's brought in at all.
Because that's the way Ralph thinks, or thought, said Drake.
Undoubtedly,
But if you will take the trouble to spell Avalon backward, you have N-O-L-A-V-A. No puns, no rearrangements, just do as Ralph did in the message.
Paris clenched both hands in excitement. Now that's the most interesting thing I've heard yet. But why no lava?
Avalon said, a piece of ground over which lava has not flowed is bare.
Paris considered this and shook his head. We might just as easily consider that ground over which lava has not flowed is rich in vegetation and is not bare. In that sense, it would be land which lava has flowed over that would be bare.
Avalon said, very well then, we can rearrange the letters slightly and we have O-N-L-A-V-A. By Councillor Paris's argument, there would be no vegetation on lava, and that anagram represents bareness.
What about the reversed lettering, said Gonzalo? Mood to doom and all that.
Well, said Avalon, we'll have to eliminate that.
Paris said, I liked no lava, but it was not convincing. The reason I liked it, though, was that the backward spelling did seem to be a reasonable solution. On lava, without the backward spelling, has nothing to recommend it.
There was a moment of silence, and Reuben said, you know, this is getting less funny all the time. Are we going to end up giving the money to the Nazis even with Henry's help?
Gonzalo said, well, let's ask him. What are we doing wrong, Henry?
Henry said, I'm not sure, Mr. Gonzalo. It does occur to me, though, that so far we have been punning and anagramming our last names. That is, the potential answers. Ought we to be working the question as well?
I don't see what you mean, Henry, said Avalon.
It strikes me, Mr. Avalon, that the phrase to the barest might just possibly be punned into to the barest, that is, B-E-A-R-E-S-T, the black widower most like a bear.
Trumbull said, terrible. It's a terrible pun, and it's a terrible suggestion. I don't see how we can get any one of us to be clearly most like a bear any more than we can get any one of us most bear.
Gonzalo said, I don't know, Tom. You've got a terrible temper. You're the most bearish.
Not while Manny is alive, said Trumbull hotly.
I've never lost my temper in my life, damn it, shouted Reuben just as hotly.
Yes, like now, said Halstead.
Paris said, gentlemen, this is getting us nowhere either. Unless someone can think of something, we'll have to give up.
Henry said, but we now have our solution to my way of thinking, Mr. Paris. If we take the challenge to be that of finding the black widower most like a bear, may I point out that if we change the position of but one letter in R-U-B-I-N, we get B-R-U-I-N, the common name for the bear in the medieval animal epics and still used today. I believe there is a hockey team known as the Bruins.
Paris said energetically, I'll buy that. It is a clear solution that fits and is unique.
The black widowers broke into applause and Henry turned pink.
Reuben said, since the money is mine, then, I will set up the trust fund with directions that the earned interest be turned over to Henry as an honorarium for his services to the club.
There was applause again.
Henry said, gentlemen, please don't. I will be overpaid.
Come, Henry, said Reuben. Are you refusing?
Henry considered, sighed, and said, I accept, sir, with thanks.